The U.S. Senate will vote on the For the People Act, a Democratic-backed package that would change voting procedures for federal elections. The bill, which passed the House earlier this year, would establish automatic voter registration, expand absentee voting options, and change campaign finance laws. Top Republicans call the legislation a Democratic power grab. Its supporters say it's needed to protect voting access, especially for minority voters. Georgia and Florida have passed new restrictions on absentee voting since the presidential election. And yesterday, Republicans in the Wisconsin State Senate passed bills that would require ballot gathering to happen near a clerk's office and bars clerks from filling in missing info on absentee ballots. Governor Evers said he'd veto those kind of bills. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you support a federal level bill that could override state rules on how we vote? Do you worry about the effect of limits on absentee voting, or do you think laws in Wisconsin and elsewhere need some clarification? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Paru Shah is an associate professor of political science at UW-Milwaukee. Paru, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
When you look at this bill at the federal level, what do you see as some of the most significant changes it would make if it were to pass, which is still an open question?
I think you pointed out a few of these in your introduction about how individual states at this point get to make a lot of decisions about how voting occurs in their states. And that leaves a lot of flexibility and discretion and differences, really, between how states decide to either make voting less restrictive or more restrictive. And this bill would really provide federal oversight and federal laws on what can and can't be done, and how to really think about managing voter voting opportunities and ensuring that voters are registered to vote, and creating, I think, some unified pathways for people to understand, like, these are the ways in which our voting rights are being upheld at the federal level.
Why is it that states have really called the shots in determining the particulars of how voting actually happens, even for federal, you know, say, congressional and presidential races?
I mean, that's just kind of the way the United States is set up in terms of federalism. And I think there's benefits to local control. I don't think that I would say that all local control is problematic. But what we saw in 1965 at the passage of the Voting Rights Act was that individual states will make decisions that disproportionately impact different groups. And you mentioned minority voters. I would argue that the types of accessibility issues that we've seen in this 2020 election are for lots of different kinds of folks, people who have transportation issues, people who have jobs where it is more difficult for them to get to the polls on a single day. The elderly, the young. And so finding ways to, at the federal level, to say, we value the vote of everybody, and how can we make it possible for more people to vote? And, you know, we saw in this 2020 election, in a year where people were expecting, because of COVID and other things, a decline in turnout, the greatest turnout we've ever seen for a presidential election. And so I think it goes to show that those kinds of structural changes where we increase the accessibility can really have a positive impact on voter turnout.
I want to give a listen to Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer talking about this bill in a committee hearing yesterday in the Senate. He said it was needed to protect voting access against the new state level restrictions we've touched on. Here's a bit of what he had to say.
Republican legislatures have seized on the big lie to restrict the franchise and inevitably make it harder for African Americans, Latinos, students, and the working poor to vote. Here in the 21st century, we are witnessing an attempt at the greatest contraction of voting rights since the end of Reconstruction and the beginning of Jim Crow.
Then at the same hearing, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said the bill amounts to a power grab by Democrats. Here's a listen to him.
This has gone from an election security bill to an ethics bill to a racial justice bill. Who knows what it'll be labeled tomorrow. But what doesn't change is the substance, because the intention doesn't change. The Democratic Party, on its own, wants to rewrite the ground rules of American politics for their benefit.
So, Paru, can you put this in context for us? are we tinkering around the edges at the state and federal levels when it comes to voting? Or, as we just heard from both leaders in the Senate, are we looking at really fundamental changes that could shape future elections?
I would argue that, yes, these are fundamental changes. And if it was passed, I think that it would improve protections that, you know, the Voting Rights Act of 1965, while very successful at that time, the kinds of ways in which voters are disenfranchised now has really shifted. And so I think it really would have a fundamental effect. I do think, I mean, from my perspective, I think it's unfortunate to think of this as a Democrat or Republican policy or bill, but more to say, I would hope that both parties would be interested in ensuring as many people as possible could vote. And the evidence, you know, contrary to what the Republicans will tell you around voter fraud as a result of these expansions to voting are just not, you know, there's no evidence of that. And so I think, you know, that's the fraud. The fraud is that the lie of if we do these things, more people will, there'll be more voter fraud. And there's no evidence of that. So, and again, in a time when we, I think both parties, I would hope, would say our democracy is stronger when more people can vote and share their perspectives and their opinions. I think we want to be moving towards that versus trying to find ways to make it more difficult.
We're talking to Paru Shah, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Milwaukee, looking at proposed changes in federal voting laws that are before the U.S. Senate. Democrats passed the bill in the House. A Senate committee tackled the issue yesterday, deadlocked, because it's 9-9 in that committee. The future, who knows what it holds in the Senate on it. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you worry about what you see at state levels when it comes to tightening up some restrictions, especially on things like absentee or early voting? Do you want to see a federal law that overrides some of that, that sets standards, more standards from state to state? You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Paru, with an evenly divided Senate, Democrats having the tiebreaker, but the filibuster is still in existence. What are you looking at for the future of this this bill in the Senate and whether it could pass as it stands?
I mean, I think the question then becomes less about kind of the kind of substance of the bill and more now about the institution of the filibuster at the Senate. And, you know, I think we, I guess the, I should say the Democrats knew that going into this first term that, you know, this was going to be something that came up. And I think it's still, this would be, I think, the first test of whether or not we, the Democrats kind of think about like, all right, are they able to make some changes to some of these institutional structures, and do they have the backing to do so? You know, I don't know if I can, I feel confident that, you know, it's going to move forward, but I think it's going to at least push the conversation around whether or not the Democrats have, you know, the ability to make changes to the filibuster.
You mentioned earlier that you would hope that both parties would be able to agree on ways to make voting accessible and safe for everybody. But it seems like it's become this zero sum game where any change is going to be perceived by one party or the other as helping one party or the other. I don't know. How do you think they could get over that?
Well, I mean, I think that's the unfortunate piece around for the last, I don't know, maybe 8-12 years, the polarization of things that you would, you know, I think on its face, you would say are not partisan one way or the other. This idea that people should have the access to, you know, have access to the vote. I think for the most part, most individuals, regardless of their party affiliation, would agree with. It then becomes a question of, you know, like, what are some of the ways in which we can do that? And do I think that, you know, the outcomes of the 2020 election are influencing some of these decisions? I do. And so I think, you know, I think as people grapple with this idea that we had this, you know, impressive voter turnout. And then if for, you know, the side that feels like they lost because of that, right, like then the question becomes like, well, how can we make decision? You know, what can we do to change that? In an ideal world, the Republicans would, you know, put up better candidates and convince voters to vote for that candidate. versus trying to say, I'm just going to change like who can vote and, you know, essentially limit the voter side of it versus thinking about how do I ensure, you know, that how do I put up candidates that speak to the constituents and convince people to vote for that person?
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Annette is with us in Madison. Annette, hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to underscore what your guest has said about voting fraud here in Wisconsin. And I have done canvassing throughout Wisconsin to try to get people who haven't previously been voters or consistently been voters to go to the polls. And there is no immediate personal incentive for people to do that. It's a very civic-minded public good behavior. The incentive to vote is being a good citizen, and many people just don't want to be part of any of that. So it's hard to convince people to vote. There's no incentive to commit fraud to vote. I worked in a bank as well, and where real fraud happens for the incentive of money. And I can tell you that people, they have never proven any evidence of voter fraud on a large scale basis. And I can tell you in talking to hundreds, maybe thousands of voters in Wisconsin, all over the state, there is no personal incentive. They don't see that getting a candidate elected has an immediate incentive in their lives per se, but when you talk about the public good of being a part of it, and any particular candidate might in a large scale way move the world better in the next 5 years, but I don't even understand what the incentive is to vote.
Annette, I would take your point. Thanks for calling in. Baru, what do you think of Annette's perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think she brings up a great point about kind of this idea that for the most part, you know, voting in the United States is difficult. There are many, many kind of hoops to jump through to get to that point of being able to cast your ballot. And when we only had one day to do that, that was really, I think, in many ways restrictive. And, you know, all of the things that happened in 2020 as a result of COVID were policies and practices that were, you know, thought of before that. You know, this idea that we would have more absentee ballots, that people would have to opt out of registration versus opt in. Those aren't new ideas. It just, you know, I think what happened in 2020 was that we were forced to make some decisions around that. And she makes, I think, a great point about how voting is, you know, still, I think, for many people, a additional thing to do. And so the idea that individuals would, you know, try to do some large scale kind of fraud, I think, is one, very difficult to do given all the security systems we have. And we have a fantastic election security system in the United States. And two, just seems, I think, on its face, pretty unlikely given, you know, other, like what the benefits are to you as an individual voter.
We pick up our talk now with Paru Shah, political science professor at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, looking at the Federal Voting Law Act being taken up in the U.S. Senate. It would expand things like absentee voting options and create automatic voter registration, among other changes. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you vote in a different way in 2020 than you had in past years? What do you think about some of the new options that were on the table, in large part because of COVID-19? Do you want to see changes in voting laws in Wisconsin and or nationwide? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll go back to your calls now. Jane is with us in Green Bay. Jane, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I have a tendency to look at things from the back view. So in this case, Democrats are trying to offer opportunities to vote more, which should be, you know, a lot of their constituents. What are the Republicans saying as far as would this bill disallow their voters, or would it not expand voting abilities to their voters? What are they concerned with? How are we outnumbering each other?
Jane, thanks for the call. And I know in the run-up to the 2020 elections, there were concerns from Republicans that then-President Trump's criticism of absentee and mail voting might actually depress their own turnout. In some cases, there were concerns. What do you think of Jane's question, Peru?
No, I think that's a fantastic question. And I think it is a question that I think the Republicans have to answer. I would say that the polling that I've seen shows that voters on both sides, I should say, are interested in expanding voter kind of registration and opportunities to vote. I mean, I think what I hear the Republicans really saying is that even if we do some of these, you know, like what we did here in Wisconsin in terms of changing absentee voting, that it's not going to have, it's not going to depress enough of the vote that people would still be able to, you know, look and say, okay, well, now I can't use that method. I'll use another method and I'll continue to kind of move forward with, you know, the options given to me versus saying, you know, that by expanding this, you know, you're just giving people more opportunities to vote and lengthening the time in which they can do so. So, I mean, you're not going to hear any of the Republicans say, oh, we want less people to vote, even though that I think is the outcome that will, you know, occur from these kinds of restrictive laws. But that rather that we even within these laws, the voters who really care about it will still show up.
Thanks a lot for that call. I pulled up a chart of the most popular votes attained by presidential candidates in American history. All the elections. Number one was Joe Biden in 2020 with 81 million plus. Number two was Donald Trump in 2020 with 74 million plus. A lot of people. Barack Obama, by the way, number three and four. A lot of people voted in this election on both sides, Peru. I don't know. What do you make of just that raw vote number on both sides?
Well, I mean, this is what I was saying earlier, that I think that while Republicans are using the fraud argument, what has actually happened is that both sides benefited, right? All voters benefited from the changes in the election laws that increased, you know, availability. And again, the focus, this idea that, you know, it's really helping this particular group of folks like racial minorities. Yes, they are, I think, a group that is historically disenfranchised by voter laws. But it also helped people who lived in rural places, people who had less access to transportation, older individuals. And those are all folks who potentially are not voting for Democrats. So I think, again, if the true kind of interest here is to ensure that every voter who wants to vote can do that. I think it benefits both parties.
Let's go back to our callers now. Carol is with us in Milwaukee. Carol, hi.
Hi. I think it also includes more things besides just voting. I think it includes that new law would include the Citizens United problem where endless dark money is given to candidates and things like that. I think there's more to the new law, isn't there?
Carol, thanks for bringing that up. That is, there's a provision that would require disclosure of a lot of money that is put into political spending that isn't currently required to be disclosed, Peru. I don't know as much about that, but is that something you're keeping your eye on as well?
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is one of those times where I think to some of the kind of comments that we heard earlier from when you were kind of sharing from Congress, right, like this idea like, oh, this bill keeps expanding. It does include campaign finance reform as well to the caller's comment. And I think it's something, again, that there has been bipartisan support for in the past. This idea that we want to have a better understanding of one, like where money is coming from in terms of campaigns, and two, to really enhance the power of small donations for candidates. And so in the past, this has been something that I would argue, you know, both Republicans and Democrats have been interested in. And, you know, is, I think, another significant part of this bill.
Thanks, Carol, for the call. In our last minute or so, Peru, are there other provisions or things happening at state levels that you have your eye on that we haven't gotten into yet?
Yeah, I mean, I think when I think about kind of the ways in which this bill is similar to the Voting Rights Act of 1965, you know, like that bill passes and then there's a flurry of state level kind of attempts to undermine it. And I would say that similarly, since 2020, I think we're looking at over 100 state level bills looking to restrict voter access. And some of them are things like we see here in Wisconsin, where it's really restricting what the clerks can do and absentee ballots. And then, you know, I think the one in Georgia about providing water and food to people waiting in line, right? Like all these kind of different kinds of bills that on their face really do look like ways in which we're really trying to kind of change fundamentally what happened in 2020. And rather than seeing that as a positive indicator of how, as the United States, we were able to overcome a pandemic and ensure voting for more people than ever, as a way, rather seeing that as like evidence that too many people, you know, it actually worked too well. And so I am concerned that a lot of these state level restrictions will continue. And given the, you know, I think probably unsure where HR1 is going to go and the unclear passage of that, I think those things will continue to be a concern.
Peru, thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Peru Shah, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Milwaukee, joining us for a look at the For the People Act, a bill now in the U.S. Senate on voting reforms.